Mick and MJ in the morning, brought to you by Sportsbet. Nobody does it easier than Sportsbet.
Sydney has suffered a horrifying and violent attack.
Rampage at Sydney's Bondi Junction Westfield Shopping Centre. Six innocent people are dead, with other shoppers rushed to hospital.
40-year-old man from Queensland, Joel Couchy, has been identified as the offender in this matter. Very clearly to us at this stage, it would appear that this is related to the mental health of the individual.
The first thoughts of all Australians are with the victims of these terrible acts and their loved ones. Our nation offers our deepest condolences and sympathies.
We have been talking in some detail today on the program about the horrific events at the Westfield Shopping Centre over the weekend. We're aware of six people dead. We're aware of people still in hospital. There's also a lot of eyewitness accounts to be had, and people whose lives have been changed forever by what they experienced out there. We've talked about Senior Officer Amy Scott and her heroics, the Bollard men. Also on scene, a man, who's used to keeping a cool head in a crisis. Andy Reid, who you know as Reedy from Bondi Rescue, happened to be there at the time and helped in the aftermath. Reedy, thanks for joining us on the program today. Can you tell us, from your perspective, your account of what happened? Why were you there, and when did you first know something was going on?
Morning, guys. Just what you said about those three people that helped. That, like, they're the, just want to start with, they're the real heroes. Amy Scott, what an absolute legend. Yep. Like, are you kidding me?
Mm.
Like, running down a guy with a, you know, 12-inch knife or whatever it was, like, mate. And the guys with the bollards keeping him at bay, like, that's...
And led her to him, I believe. They actually showed her the way to the guys. So, top shelf. All right, what about you, mate? Where were you when all this unfolded? You're buying yourself a bed or something, yeah?
I was buying a bunk bed for my kids in Maya. And an attendant came up to me and said, mate, everyone's got to evacuate. There's people outside being stabbed. And I was just like, you know, you're kind of... There's usually a few false alarms. And so I went to walk out, and the shutters had come down on Maya, and obviously they were doing that to keep everybody safe. And I was like, oh, well, maybe this is a bit serious. And then bang, bang, we heard the gunshots. And I was like, oh, maybe it's not someone being stabbed. Maybe it's someone shooting people. And I was just like, wow. And then as I panned back, I looked through the gaps in the shutters, and there was a woman outside Cotton On, and she was just bleeding badly. And I think there was one person already helping her. But I was just like, mate, that's what we do. We deal with that stuff on the beach. So I couldn't get out the shutter. I was like looking for exits and trying to lift it up and couldn't get it out. So I went down to level 4, which was the level that she was on, and I spoke to a security guard. I said, mate, can you just uplift the shutter up a little bit and let me get under? I want to go and help that lady out there that's bleeding. And so I went out, and as I came around the escalator, it was like, it wasn't just that woman. Sadly, there was multiple victims sort of spread out down through Westfield, and you could just sort of see every 50 metres. And so went straight to work on her, and there was two other bystanders there helping me, and we just I'm mostly conscious of the kids listening and stuff, so I don't want to go into too much detail.
Yes.
But it was horrible, and we just sort of got her as good as we could. And then I looked up, and there was another victim that there was two police officers working on her, and at this time they were still looking for a second attacker. So it was a bit nerve-wracking, but also I knew the police had to go and do what they did best and look for the second attacker. So I went over and sort of took over from them on this other patient and started doing CPR. And she was in a pretty bad way, and so I did the best I could with her. And then a couple of ambulance officers came over, and they arrived, and we did a bit more work on her. And then I got up to go help with a third patient, and as I walked past the shop, there was just an empty pram there, and I was just like, what? Why is there an empty pram here? Like, where's mum? Where's the baby? And I've got three young kids, and I just was a little bit, you know, you're kind of thinking a million things. And anyway, I kept going and went down to the next patient. And sadly, there was another ambulance officer there, and she was sort of beyond help, sadly. And so after that, I looked up and looked around, and there was sort of lots of police officers by then and lots of paramedics. So I sort of let the professionals do what they do best, and I got out of there. But sadly, once I got out of there, I couldn't get my car out, and so I started walking towards Bondi Road, and I got a message from one of my good friends saying that sadly, one of our friends was in the hospital fighting for her life, and she'd been in there already, and that was the mother of the beautiful baby, Ash, who was a really, like, she was a friend of mine and a absolutely beautiful soul. And we talk about heroes, but I reckon she having to hand her baby to some strangers to save its life, that's probably one of the most heroic acts next to Amy Scott's act on that day, you know, saving her baby's life by, I just, yeah.
Riggedy, on that point, it's the story that stayed with all of us because Ash, we all know someone that knew Ash or her beautiful partner, and that she was the ultimate, you know, moment. She always wanted to be a mum and to hand over her severely injured baby as she was, as we know, dying there. And Ash was loved by so many.
So many. We've got a pretty tight-knit run group down there, and we're all very close, and we all went for a walk for Ash this morning from Bondi to Bronte and back, and had a coffee and celebrated the beautiful person that she was, just thinking about her. She loved a sunrise. She loved a morning run. She had the biggest smile on her face at 5 a.m. to go for a run in the morning, and that's the kind of people that we wanted to surround ourselves with, and that's who she was. She was just a beautiful person inside and out, and the world lost someone very special on Saturday. A few people very special on Saturday, you know.
Reedy, we want to thank you for your time today, especially given your connection, let's say, to the victims. And I just want to thank God that you were there on the day, that someone like you was on hand to help out. I'm speechless. I don't know what to say, but thank you for being there, and thank you for coming on the show and sharing your story, especially letting us know a little bit more about that beautiful woman and what happened to her in one of the most shocking events to grip this state. Thanks for coming on today, Reedy.
Go on, your buddy.
No worries, guys. Yeah, I mean, there was other bystanders there that did a fantastic job as well.
I get that.
And, yeah, there's so many people, just that's the community we live in, but and everyone wants to help. So no worries, guys. Thank
Good
you.
On you, Reedy.
Thank you, mate.
This mother starts screaming really, really frantically, running back and forth, like she doesn't know what to do. Then she runs back to the pram, picks up her baby, and then all I see is blood.
Just holding the baby and trying to compress the baby, and same with the mother, trying to compress the blood from stopping and calling ambulance.
I came out of the hairdresser and I seen a gentleman chasing the attacker with a knife. He was shouting that you've just stabbed my wife. I didn't really know what to do because he was literally next to me. We all went back into the hairdressing shop where we were. We all stayed inside.
So I saw the wanted a copper, so I followed her. And just as we got around the corner, there he was. He just come in and just started floating towards us, and all I heard was put it down, and she shot him. She didn't shoot him, he would have kept going. He was on the rampage.
Well, they are all eyewitness accounts to the horrific events that unfolded over the weekend at Westfield Shopping Centre in Bondi Junction. Also witnessing those events, she was on her break working at Bondi Junction, was Shawnee Johnson, who joins us now. Thanks for your time, Shawnee. Can you talk us through your experience of what happened on the day, please?
Hi, good morning. As you said, I was on my break. I was working that Saturday. The last 2 days have been pretty heavy, but I was on my break, and I had noticed that there were people starting to run. At first, I thought, you know, there was a group of women, so I thought they were together and they were running to something. I quickly realized that they were running from something, and more people were starting to run, and a look of fear was on a lot of people's faces. I got up straight away. I had my bag and my belongings with me, and I just asked someone in the crowd. I said, "What's happening?" Someone said, "I don't know," but someone else said, "Someone's been stabbed." I then ran down the escalator, and my workplace was right down the escalator, and all the doors to my workplace were locked. So a lot of people in the centre had caught wind and were, taking precautions. I looked through one of the peepholes in the door and said to one of my colleagues, "Let me in. I need to come in." And in that moment, it happened so quickly, but I turned around and I saw the attacker. He was within about 20 metres of me.
Holy moly.
He had a black knife in his hand, and it's in that moment, I don't think I properly registered what was happening. it was just happened so quickly. But he walked straight to me. He made eye contact with me briefly.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, if I was, you know, I was ready to act if I had to, but I didn't have to because he was pretty intent on walking straight ahead. And yes. Within a moment, he was gone and I was let back into my workplace.
Wow.
Tell us a bit about his demeanor, please. I mean, this is the account from someone who was within 20 metres of the perpetrator of these events. Can you tell us, tell us how he appeared to you?
Yeah, someone asked me if he was on drugs or something. I know. He seemed pretty focused, and he was looking straight ahead, and he was walking with intent. I didn't get too much from him, but he kind of glanced over at us and kept walking straight ahead. He wasn't interested in us. I don't know why. You know, hearing what had happened and what he had just done, it you know, makes my blood run cold to know that I encountered him after.
Yes.
And what was more chilling, I had my back to him initially and I had to turn around to see him and he was so close. That's what's staying with me today and for the next few days and for the next few, you know, forever really.
Can you talk us through how, so you found out, you said people caught wind of it, but I imagine there was general confusion on the ground as it unfolded. How long before people in your situation understood what was going on?
I think the entire thing was incredibly confusing. You know, I'm 30 years old, 31. I've never witnessed anything like this. And I even said to a few people, this doesn't happen in Australia. It feels like it doesn't happen here. I think everybody was just reacting from everybody. And I think there was a word going around saying someone's been stabbed. So everybody was reacting to that. But the danger, we didn't see it and we didn't feel it until we heard gunshots. And that's when it became incredibly real, I think, to everybody. And that was incredibly terrifying because we heard them loud and clear, but we still didn't know what danger it was. We didn't know how close it was and we didn't understand how many people were involved.
Wow. Yep. Shawnee, can I ask, how are you going today? How are you feeling?
Oh, thank you. Look, I got my first night of sleep last night, which was nice. I think just still processing. Mm. It feels like something, it's still confusing. I mean, even now, you know, even hearing it, the gunshots, even everything that happened feels like
surreal.
Again, something that doesn't happen in Bondi. I can't stress enough how busy it was that day. It was a beautiful autumn Saturday, you know, first day of school holidays. I remember remarking to one of my employees, it's so busy today. Mm. And it just feels very strange. But I'm doing okay. And my place is offering a lot of psychological services that I will be undertaking and participating in.
Well done.
Well, surround yourself with your friends and family and look after yourself. And thank you for sharing your story today. I think it'll help a lot of people understand and, as you said, try and process these events. Thanks, Shawnee. We appreciate it.
Thanks, guys.
Let's hear from the experts. Dr. Tim Watson-Munro has joined us on the program. Tim, what can you tell us about this bloke and his motivation? I know it's early days, but what do we know about this guy?
G'day, Mick. Well, the big debate has been whether he's mad or bad. There's some discussion about a schizophrenic illness. He may well have had a schizophrenic illness, but he certainly was capable of forward planning. There was some footage, I gather, of him going into a Vietnamese restaurant, ordering a meal. He was able to obtain a weapon, a knife with a very long blade. He went into the Bondi shopping centre, exited, went back in and then killed tragically 6 people, including 5 women. So whatever the madness was, I think it was overcome by his innate badness. So that's the first thing. He's a person who's capable of forward planning and aware of his consequences, and he had an intention to kill people.
there was premeditation here. Can I ask you, and this may be a question you can't answer or don't have enough information at this stage, but just generally, and I see whenever I see a mass killing like this, I go, why don't these people kill themselves? Why do they have to go in and shoot others before either taking their own lives or being murdered by police? If I say killed by police, what happens there?
Oh, look, I think they want the attention. They want the notoriety. There's been a lot of speculation about misogyny in this case. You know, one woman a week or more is killed in Australia by a man.
Yes.
And I don't think it's any coincidence that five of the six deceased were women. He wanted the attention. And then, you know, you've probably heard the term death by cop.
Yes.
He would have known that ultimately he would be killed. He didn't want to be arrested, clearly. It would have been a lot easier for everyone if you'd just jumped off the gap, wouldn't it? But it didn't happen.
Tim, another obvious thing for mine was, and as Mick was saying, how we see these tragedies unfold, and you see a lot of people at the shopping centre who are filming this incident, but I don't see many of them helping or running to help anybody. Is this a new epidemic of and I know, look, my kids got sent other footage of that wasn't on the news. I mean, it's one of them things you go, why wouldn't you put your phone down and try and help these poor buggers?
I think it's a very good point. I mean, my advice to people generally, and I've worked a lot in major crisis situations, is protect yourself. But standing around filming this stuff, it just speaks to the sort of dissociated lives we live. Where this is almost like a movie in real time, isn't it?
Yeah.
And all credit to those who did step in. The bollard man, as he's been described, and, you know, the police inspector who courageously, I understood it, ran 300 metres from the Waverley Police Station to tackle this bloke. There's some unsung heroes in this case, but the footage, this sort of voyeurism that's out there as a general proposition is a bit sickening.
Mm. It is. It's a modern malaise. I remember after the Port Arthur massacre, and I think it was the FBI, someone, a behavioural scientist, or someone came out, and he wrote a report. And when he finished the report, they asked him what the findings were, and he said, you know what? He said, I'm going to seal these findings for some time because people aren't ready to hear the truth of it. People wanted to blame this man, they didn't want to unpack the issues around mental health or around ability to obtain guns and all the underlying factors. Is there more to be discovered here than one man losing his mind and going nuts in a shopping centre?
Well, I think so. I think that it's multifactorial. He had a mental illness. There's a big issue in the community about people not getting treatment in time. I don't treat people. I assess people ahead of court hearings. But I can tell you, it can take 3 to 6 months to see a psychologist these days. Often the mentally ill become non-compliant for one reason or other with their medication. This person had moved, as I understand it, from Queensland to New South Wales, was living rough, living in his car some of the time. As you know, we have a major housing crisis in Australia. It's hard enough for people with jobs to get a home these days, let alone the vulnerable in the community. So there's a lot of stuff to unpack there. Can you predict this behaviour? Generally not, unless there's a lot of red flags preceding it. I mean, on Friday, he was just an itinerant guy walking around Sydney, as I understand
it. Yeah.
Saturday afternoon, he's murdered six people. So we can learn from this. It gets back to resourcing and funding more people to treat people in the community who are unwell.
All right, well said. Thank you for your time this morning. We know you're in demand and busy. We might try and catch up with you later in the week as more information comes to hand.
Happy to talk any time. Thanks, mate.
Okay.
And if you are struggling, help is available 24/7. Call Lifeline 13 11 14.
People still coming to terms with the tragic and horrific events that unfolded at the Bondi Junction Westfield over the weekend here. And we thank him for his time today to give us an update on what's going on with those who are injured and currently in hospitals inner city Sydney is the Health Minister, Ryan Park. Ryan, thank you for your time today, Minister. Is there an update or anything you can tell us in regard to those still hospitalised after this incident?
Yeah, we've still got a number of victims hospitalised, around 8 in fact. That'll move throughout the day. Some will no doubt leave hospital over the course of the day and days ahead. Some of them are still critical, but pleasingly, the young 9-month-old baby who had emergency operation on Saturday evening at the Children's Hospital at Randwick, that world-leading hospital at Randwick that we have here in New South Wales, her condition has moved from critical to serious, and is something that I think our nation is very pleased to hear as we hold our breath for all of those victims of this absolutely horrific event that took place at Bondi over the weekend.
We are pleased to hear it, and we're glad to know we have such a great health system in this country, and particularly this town. You must also have been very proud of the way first responders behaved in this incident, and that, well, I believe 75 paramedics and doctors were dispatched to the scene. Can you talk us through that, please?
Yeah, it was phenomenal to see that many responders at the scene in such a quick time. When I spoke to them on Saturday night after the event, I went up to Randwick Ambulance Station and spoke directly with some of the men and women who were actually the first on scene. And the scenes were chaotic, horrendous and frightening. They were performing CPR and emergency treatment on people, still not knowing if there was another assailant in the building. And that is beyond brave. But what I said to them is how proud I was to be their health minister, but I think how proud our nation was to have such a skilled and committed and passionate group of people who, without a doubt, have ensured that people have woken up on Sunday alive, because without them and without the work of our talented surgeons and our clinicians and our nursing staff at the hospitals that they were transported to, the carnage could mean a lot more in terms of people impacted.
Well said, Minister. Now, I believe mental health support is still being offered to people at Bondi Junction if needed. Can you confirm that?
Yeah, we are. We deliberately wanted to establish mental health supports close to where the incident occurred, and from 2 o'clock yesterday, specialist mental health support staff were moving around that Bondi area. They'll be then in there today, and we'll be providing targeted support for those frontline responders so that they can deal with some of the issues that they've had to process and be involved in over the last 36 hours.
Okay, can I ask you a bigger question? And it might not be one you're in a position to answer just yet, but invariably in these instances, sadness does turn to anger, and people do, and some elements of the media will look to play a blame game. Is this someone who slipped through the cracks of a health system? I know this can't be anticipated. It would be incredible to think that you can anticipate such a tragic event like this, but are we going to uncover anything and the history of this man's treatment that you can speak to at the moment?
No, well, certainly in the initial analysis of Mr. Couchy, once the name was formally and appropriately given to New South Wales Health, we obviously conducted a range of checks. We've had very, very little to do with Mr. Couchy on that first check of databases. He was a Queensland man who had only recently come in to Sydney. I think from memory, last year he presented at one of our hospitals with an ear infection that he was treated for, but we've had very little involvement. That doesn't mean that we can't get better, doesn't mean we can't learn, doesn't mean we can't look at our health services. I think an incident like this will always mean that governments and government agencies in partnership with private health facilities will always look at what could we have done differently and is there ways that things are doing better. And we're happy to be a part of that conversation as we work through that issue with the police and, of course, the coroner.
Okay, well, we want to thank you for your time today. We know it's a very busy time, and I say congratulate the health system and their workers for how they've responded to date. You make the point rightly. We should be very proud of them and their response. Is there anything else you'd like to say to our listeners and the community before we let you go today?
No, thank you. Just if you're out and about today and you see a paramedic or one of our nurses maybe getting a bite to eat, just pop over and thank them. They're people who, that means a lot to them, and it would mean an enormous amount to me as their minister of people sometimes at A, to if they know someone or if they're out and about, just to thank them and thank their colleagues on what has been a very, very difficult and challenging 36 hours.
Well said. Health Minister Ryan Park, thanks for joining us on the program today.
Thanks for having me.
Prime Minister, thanks for joining us on the show. We know how busy you will be today. In troubled times like these, we, as a nation, turn our eyes to our leadership. And can I give you this opportunity to address our listeners, our audience, the people of Sydney and New South Wales? What is it that, what is the messaging? What is it that you would like to say to everyone out there doing it tough today?
Well, all Australians will be doing it tough today. This was a tragedy which was certainly not foreseen. All of us know what it's like to do shopping on a Saturday afternoon.
Mm.
And there at Westfield at Bondi Junction, it's such a big shopping centre. You spoke about a mate going to the movies. I've been to the movies there. I've done shopping there. And the fact that six people have lost their lives, victims. Another victim has been identified this morning, Yishuan Cheng. She was a Chinese national studying here who's lost her life.
Wow.
Along with the Ashley Good, Dawn Singleton, Jade Young, Pikria Dashia, and the security guard who lost his life, a refugee who'd only been here for a short period of time, for us to hear. This is just tragic. And it is a time for us to come together, to hold close those loved ones that we have, for us to express our condolences for those who've lost loved ones, to express our hope and prayers for those people who are still receiving support in hospital. There's still five people remain in intensive care units around Sydney, one of whom is still in a critical condition. But it's also a time for us to give thanks to the remarkable bravery that we saw on the weekend, not the least of which, of course, is Police Inspector Amy Scott, who ran towards danger and took this guy out and no doubt saved lives in doing so.
Absolutely true. You learn a lot about people when they're under pressure, and she stepped up to the plate and covered herself and the police force in a lot of glory. We're sometimes quick to criticise, but on this occasion, thankfully, she was there on the spot, and as you rightfully point out, who knows how that could have escalated even further if not for her. You must also be proud of the first responders and indeed the health system as it stands, as for its immediate and swift response. I believe up to 75 paramedics and doctors were on the site in quick fashion. And once again, as I said, we learn about people under pressure, but the first responders in this instance have done themselves and our community proud.
They sure did, MG. It was quite remarkable that in a very short period of time, police and emergency responders were there on site running towards danger. Ambulance people, medical professionals headed to the site as well. The work of the New South Wales Police in very quickly liaising as well with the Australian Federal Police and our National Security Agency, so that we got information out there in a very timely manner, given the circumstances, to counteract some of the misinformation that was out there on social media and some of the mainstream media, it must be said as well, just to indicate that the single perpetrator had been taken down, that there wasn't an ongoing risk, was really important in calming the public. But the ongoing mental health support, I was there in Bondi Junction yesterday to lay flowers along with other leaders, including Chris Minns. And you had people walking around with little vests on, indicating they were there to provide mental health support for people. And that's so important, that people feel as though they can reach out. These are tough times, and you know, people were shocked and remain shocked. And I spoke with the loved ones of some of the victims yesterday, and it is such a shocking incident. And my heart goes out to them, as do, I'm sure, the feelings of all of your listeners and all Australians today.
Well, we saw you, well said, we saw you laying a wreath yesterday with Chris Minns. The flags are at half-mast. It's a time to reflect in the state of Sydney. Thank you for your time today. Is there something you'd like to say on the way out to our audience?
Oh, just I think today's a day where people will hug their loved ones a little bit tighter. And
okay. Well said, buddy.
Show we are. You know, we're a society that sticks together. Yep. And at times like this, Australians will stick together.
Thanks for your time today, Prime Minister.
Good man.
Mick and MG in the morning, brought to you by Sportsbet. Nobody does it easier than Sportsbet. Mick and MG in the morning, weekdays from 6 on Sydney's Triple M.